Hard, heavy, and hair.
Badass music.
For badass listeners. With Pariah Burke.
This is Pariah Burke. In this episode of the Hard, Heavy, and Hair podcast is my full interview with Brandon Cook of Black and Blue and Metalmorphosis. You heard excerpts of this interview on the radio in the Hard, Heavy, and Hair show, number 237 and 238. Now listen to the full, uncut, uncensored interview with Brandon Cook of Black and Blue. To hear the music discussed during the interview and played by Brandon, stream Hard, Heavy, and Hair show number 237 and 238 on demand 25 hours a day, 8 days a week at PariahRocks.com. This is actually my second time interviewing Brandon Cook. If you want to hear that first interview, which is much longer and covers all sorts of topics, including Brandon playing with Metallica, members of Megadeth, Queensryche, and so many other musicians, check out Hard, Heavy, and Hair show number 226 from November 2019, or a previous episode of the Hard, Heavy, and Hair podcast, which contains that complete two-hour interview with Brandon Cook of Black and Blue, The Loyal Order, Metamorphosis, Appetite for Deception, and so much more. This time around, the conversation focuses mostly on Brandon Cook's guitar work with Black and Blue, and with pushing Black and Blue to the envelope of what it's capable of. We also delve into Metalmorphosis, Styx, and a couple of other topics you'll find interesting. Here's that interview. I'm Pariah Burke, host of the Hard, Heavy, and Hair show, and once again, I'm joined by my friend Brandon Cook, guitarist extraordinaire for Black and Blue. I gotta look at my list, he's got so many projects. State of Balance, Invasive Species, Appetite for Deception, Guns N' Roses Tribute Band, Jukebox Hero, Foreigner Tribute Band. What am I missing?
Did you say Black and Blue?
Black and Blue.
The Loyal Order and Metalmorphosis.
Metalmorphosis, that's right.
And just pretty much anything that comes along that's interesting. Like at the NAMM show this year, I'm playing with Delana, who is an amazing singer. We're going to be doing, I think, a Thursday afternoon at the Sennheiser booth. But check the schedule at the Sennheiser booth if you happen to be at NAMM this year. And also, I'm pretty sure we're playing the main stage the same day at NAMM with Delana. And the band is just slamming. We're really excited about it. And sometimes I play in a group called the Muffuzz, which is a cover band.
And the Muffuzz?
Muffuzz. It's like five of the smokingest players in town, and it's like motherfuckers.
Nice.
Yeah, like the Muffuzz. And our lead singer Jeff Carroll like wrote a record with Jeff Tate. That's how badass he is. He's hired to like write songs for Jeff Tate from Queensryche. And so
and Operation Mindcrime. Is it just Mindcrime he's touring under?
Yeah, Operation Mindcrime.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah, that's his new project. And so like, there's that, then there's like BAM, my acoustic trio, where we basically just like make fun of each other and change the lyrics to fuck with each other throughout the show, see who we can make laugh. And
live on stage.
Yeah. It's never planned. We kind of go and act like idiots and do like various, like we'll do like George Michael, and then we'll run into Poison, and then we'll do like, you know, one of the singers in the group's name is Andrew Green, and he likes to do like Richard Marx. And then we'll do like Steel Panther, I do a bunch of like Tenacious D songs and anything we can do to just make people laugh. It's pretty fun. It's always a fun gig. Then I do a Tesla tribute band sometimes, like,
I haven't seen that. I want to catch you in the Tesla tribute band.
We've only done 4 songs live, and it was part of the Muffuzz thing, you know. But it was really fun. It was hard. It was probably one of the hardest bands I've ever played in. You know, like the group of songs that we did, it was just really, really difficult. And, you know, it's like I've played Dream Theater and stuff like that. And that's all just like pretty much just like making sure that you can play everything technically. But something about playing Tesla music was really difficult. It was so musical. And, okay, now you've got to come down here and you've got to change your tone. And not only that, you know, singing harmonies with these really great riffs, and man, Tesla just kicked my ass. It was so fun.
last time we talked about Loyal Order, Invasive Species,
yeah.
Appetite for Deception, I had your band shirt on.
that was an awesome shirt.
So I'd like to talk about the band you're most famous for, Black and Blue.
Yeah.
Are you the lead guitarist for Black and Blue, or do you and Bob trade off? Or?
Well, you know, I've been in the band the longest, and I think I have the most leads. I'm not sure, but it's pretty much cut down the middle. You know, like I kind of take a lead role just because I have seniority. I've been there a little longer, but, you know, to me on stage, it should look like we're co-lead guitarists. You know, like, so like Bob is one of my best friends. The guy's fucking awesome. He's a really, really good dude. And there's a lot of mutual respect between us. You know, we really like, you know, literally care about each other. We used to go and like, we'd break bread together all the time. It was Taco Tuesday or Thanksgiving or Christmas. And, you know, one of the reasons we called him to be in the band was because he's such a good guy. He's such a nice person and really open heart and giving soul. So, you know, having him in the band is not to mention he's just a phenomenal guitarist. So, but as far as me, like how my role in the group, Patrick and I kind of have this tandem stage thing that we do together, and we're always, you know, kind of making sure that we have this, our harmonies are tight. We're the main background singers in the group, you know, so I play a lot of roles, you know, like sort of, I play the lead guitarist sort of, and you know, with Bob taking a good share of the leads too. And then I'm like sort of this tandem guitar team with Pat. And also I'm sort of kind of a cheerleader. I'm the one that moves the most on stage.
You know? I noticed that. I've seen some videos of you performing and you seem to move around even more than Jamie.
Yeah. Jamie's a more stationary kind of singer, you know, but I've always been a very active guitarist. Like as long as I can remember, I've always been the guy that's like running pillar to post. It's just sort of how I am. I'm very active, you know, and when we did M3, it was the biggest stage that I played on with Black and Blue, and I was just like, oh yeah, I'm using that son of a bitch. And, you know, people dug it, you know, like I'm running all the way out there, you know, like there's light cans and stuff like that. And I'm like, what's up, you know, playing to people. And I took my cue from the guys in Guns N' Roses. You know, they are very active. They move all over the place. And like Duff McKagan is a very good example. Like he's like Michael Myers. He just walks everywhere he goes. Somehow he ends up right at the mic when he needs to be. But he's just very, but for
great
me.
Timing, huh?
Yeah. And I take some of that, but like more than that, I take my cue from Slash, because Slash is like, he's just very cutting, you know. And I play Slash in a Guns N' Roses tribute band. But when I saw him doing that, I was just like, that's what I've always wanted to do. And I didn't know you were allowed to do that, because a lot of the bands that I played in, because I was so physically active, they were just like, why are you doing that? You look stupid, you know, and like a lot of criticism and, you know.
It's about entertaining.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're a grunge band who's just going to do shoegaze, move around.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think of like myself as more like Eddie Vedder. Like he's like climbing all over the place and, you know, kind of making a spectacle of himself. And by it, know what you mean. Like most of the grunge guys are like, but I've never been that way, you know, and it wasn't like I saw somebody doing that. That wasn't what it was. It was just like, I got energy and I want to go rock. And then I saw this video of Slash playing in Tokyo. It's the Live in Tokyo from 1992. And he's just in the middle of guitar solos, just running. And he's not playing the solo perfect, but he's still doing it. And you're just like, whoa, that's so cool, you know? And so the guys in my Guns N' Roses band were like, yeah, dude, do it, you know, just go for it. And so I started doing that, got myself a wireless unit and started running all over the place and jumping up and down. It was insane. So I bringing it to Black and Blue was you can't upstage Jamie St. James, you know, that's the only rule. And
sure.
It's hard to do anyway, cause he's a rock star wherever we go. Everybody knows who Jamie is. And so, you know, if anything, it makes me look like I'm trying to upstage him. pay attention to me, you know, but I'm not really. I mean, that's just how I am. It's just my character to be. I'm excited to do what I do, and I'm excited to play on stage and play in front of literally thousands of people. And so, you know, when I get to play with amazing drummers like Pete Holmes and Jimmy DeAnda and, you know, killer rhythm section like Patrick Young and, you know, my guitar cohort, Bob Kapka, it's just exciting to me. It's really exciting. And it's hard to contain.
I've seen footage of Black and Blue from M3.
Oh, yeah.
And it seemed like, you know, Jamie's supporting you jumping around. You know, it seems like he's encouraging that. And
yeah,
it seems like you guys have really good onstage chemistry.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Jamie really respects me. I got this moment, you know, a couple of weeks ago when I went down to do Mega Cruise. And I respect him immensely, too. It's a two-way street for sure. And so we're sitting in the Rainbow, and we got the two tables that are sort of facing each other in the middle of the room. And It was surreal to me because we're in this place with all this history. And he turns to one of my friends and he goes, "Brandon Cook's the reason that we could still do this." And I'm just like, "What?" You know, he kind of goes into this rant about how, you know, I helped bring life to the band. And like, you know, I don't know if this is private information or what, but it made me feel really good. It made me feel like I'm doing my job about, you know, being more than just a replacement for Tommy Thayer or Jeff Warner. Whoop. You know, it made me feel like I'd helped the band step to another level. And that's always been one of my goals. If I get into a place, you know, into a band, I don't want to be a replacement. I want to be like an active member, like somebody who really pushes the envelope of what the band can do, what the band is able to do, like singing backgrounds that no one ever sang before, or like playing guitar leads in the right place where they couldn't do it just because, you know, for whatever reason, they just decided not to do that extra harmony there. Mm-hmm. And I had to figure out how to make it pop. And, you know, Jamie has given me a lot of license to grow in that area and help the band grow. So I feel really good about that.
That's amazing to hear that not just in private from Jamie St. James, but yeah, in a room full of other musicians.
Yeah, it was a room full of
the Rainbow Room.
Yeah, like rock and roll people. You know, like, we were talking to our mutual friends, but you know, there's people like 5 feet away from us that are like, you know, David Ellison and Frankie Bello and, you know, John Tempesta sitting at that table, like some of my favorite musicians of all time, you know. And I'm just like, yeah. It's pretty cool. Turn into a little kid for a second there. I'm just like, yeah.
And that is really cool.
Yeah, you know, in that area, like Black and Blue still has like panache. They're the kind of band that, like, you say Black and Blue and they're like, "Fucking Black, you're in Black and Blue, oh my god," you know. And you know, in Portland and Seattle, some people know it, but like in LA, people still view Black and Blue as like a seminal band because they were one of the first four or five bands that got signed to a major label record deal. You know, they got signed before Rat. You know, and their first record came out right around the same time. You know, it was like, it was Rough Cut and Rat and Quiet Riot and Motley was the first, really, of that era. Van Halen was still a 70s band. They weren't considered an 80s band.
Yeah.
You know, they created the vibe that would become the 80s, but like the bands in the 80s that really made it happen were Quiet Riot, Rat, Rough Cut, Black and Blue, and like Twisted Sister. But they were a New York band. So, anyway.
Well, and they definitely have that New York sound, like Tora Tora, or sorry, like Spread Eagle.
Yeah, you know, Spread Eagle, definitely, yeah. Rob DeLuca, Spread Eagle.
Yeah, sorry. Tora Tora and Spread Eagle both came out with new albums this year. And
yeah.
So,
Tora Tora is great, man. Like, Anthony Korda is such a nice guy. I've been fortunate enough to have a run-in with him, and he was so cool. He's a really nice person.
But I've been a big fan of Black and Blue since the beginning. I had the first album on cassette. For a lot of years,
great.
For more years, I had the cassette long after I started buying CDs. But it was just one of those, you know, wow, I'm holding on to it kind of thing.
You know? Yeah.
But anyway,
Can I tell you a quick story?
This
is a quick aside. I was hanging out with a friend in LA, and you know, we were looking in the record store, and And she's like, what do you want to do? And I was like, I don't know, I'll just look through this. And I was like, I saw a Black Keys record. And I was like, oh, Black Keys, cool. I was supposed to cut a song that sounded like the Black Keys right when I got back.
Okay.
So I reached for it, and I pulled back the thing, and I was like, fucking Jamie St. James is staring at me. It's a Black and Blue record. And my friend was very impressed with that. She was like, oh, that's cool. That's your band. And I'm like, that's my band. You know, like, pulled it out, and you know, I should have bought it, but I didn't.
You could have got it autographed.
Yeah, I could have got it autographed by my band. But yeah, so that was a pretty surreal moment where I was like, huh, I'm in a band that's this cool, you know. Anyway.
So what's your favorite Black and Blue song to play live?
Favorite Black and Blue song to play live. It's a cross between Auto Blast and Heat It Up, Burn It Out. Auto Blast is because it's just like fast, and I have to play a bunch of lead stuff while I sing the high harmony. So I'm playing lead stuff, and I'm going, Auto Blast! Just like screaming this super high melody. And then I have to do the shred like at the end of it. It's super challenging, but fucking awesome to play. And then Heat It Up, Burn It Out, it's like super heavy. It's our heaviest tune. Like that and Strong Will Rock are our two heaviest songs, but Heat It Up, Burn It Out is, I feel like it's just got this different kind of sauce on it. And so I love playing that song live. It's really, really, I just like beat the tar out of my guitar for that one. So those are my two favorites.
All right, well, why don't we give it a spin? Heat them up, burn them out.
Heat it up, burn it out, baby.
Black and Blue. Tell us what we just heard.
So we just heard Heat It Up, Burn It Out. It's one of the heaviest Black and Blue songs out there. I think it's on their last record, In Heat. And I just love that tune.
So, and you said you love playing that live.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things the Hard, Heavy, and Hair show is known for is we play deep cuts a lot.
Oh,
so what is your favorite Black and Blue song that you wish you could play live?
Uh-huh.
Which song would you love to have part of the set?
Strange Things. It's we tried playing it live, but there's some like, it's really hard to do that song without like tracks because it was one of the ones that was really well produced in the studio, and it has a couple of violin parts and maybe even like some keyboard pads. So it sounds a little naked with just the five piece, but if we could get, you know, if we could figure out an arrangement that really made it work, Strange Things would probably be in the set. It's just one of those songs that you kind of have to rehearse. And since Jamie and Pete live in LA, me and Bob and Pat live up here, it's hard to really create like a cohesive gel, you know, without rehearsing. You know,
you'd have to get how many violins?
We could probably do it with like tracks or something like that. Click track and like, you know, just hire a violin player to cut it down. But, you know, Black and Blue is not really about that. We play to a click track sometimes live, but it's more about like the live rock and roll energy and stuff like that. And a song like Strange Things doesn't really like fit into the sets that we do at a festival show. Like if we had more headline shows that we were doing, we'd probably do stuff like that. But right now we've been focusing on festivals and, you know, sort of like the cruises, Monsters of Rock Cruise. And they don't really, the long songs don't really go over well there. You know, most of the fans that are there, they're into, you know, the hits. So yeah, we
Nasty have, Nasty.
Yeah, Nasty Nasty, Hold On to 18, Auto Blast, the ones that are really well known. And as most bands can attest, when you play something that's a deep cut, even though they're probably enjoying it, they don't move and the energy stops in the room. Some people go to the bar, you know, the people that aren't big fans, they're like, oh, I'm just going to get a drink, or they leave, you know. So we try to make sure we keep people in the room. You know, usually that entails playing like the more rock and roll songs that kind of right up the middle, like Nasty Nasty and stuff like that. And also, you know, when you have like 45 minutes to an hour on these festivals or the Monster Rock Cruise, it's just hard to fit in like a deep cut that's in particular, like I think Strange Things, it's like 5 minutes or 6 minutes long. So longer tunes are just harder to fit in. Now, if you're Guns N' Roses and you have like November Rain or something like that, or like you're Led Zeppelin and you got Stairway to Heaven, of course, that's going to go in the set. But, you know,
well, Def Leppard,
those are huge hits.
Joe Elliott said just the other day that he was, one of the aspects he really liked about the residency in Vegas was he gets to sleep in the same room multiple nights in a row.
Yeah.
But another big thing that he really liked was they changed the set list apparently every show.
Yeah.
And they're playing a lot of deep cuts, a lot of old things from the catalog. He said they haven't touched the first Def Leppard album, but they're playing, you know, they've got a pretty big catalog, and they're playing the hits and everything.
Yeah, from High and Dry Forward, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think for a thing like Vegas, people come to multiple shows in a row. They'll come to Vegas and they'll be like, I got to see Def Leppard at least twice. You know, that would be really cool in my book to see Def Leppard more than once.
Yeah.
Just to see how well they sing 2 days in a row. No, that's exactly the same as yesterday. No, just kidding. No, I've heard they sing really, really, really well live. And I still have yet to see them. That's one of my bucket list bands, Def Leppard.
I've seen them. Good show.
Oh, really?
Good show. Maybe I shouldn't admit this on the air, but first off, I love Tesla. Always been a huge Tesla fan.
Uh-huh.
So I went there for Tesla first, then Def Leppard.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, yeah, Styx was fine. You know, the singles on the radios in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mr. Roboto. Dennis DeYoung's stuff is amazing, but they don't play that because Dennis DeYoung's not on the band anymore. So they don't play what I consider the greatest Styx stuff. So I was like, I don't really care. You know, it was an outdoor event, you know, one of those covered ones. And I was like, you know what? The Styx set will be a great time for me to go grab some food and a beer and, you know, hit the head. So I always make it a habit to buy concert shirts before the show. You know, I go to the merch tent before the show because I don't want to run, you know, them run out. So I buy my Tesla shirt, I buy my Def Leppard shirt. Styx set, I'm glued to my seat. They just put on such an amazing show. Before Def Leppard came out, I run to the merch tent and buy the last Styx shirt in my size. You know, and the person I was with was like, I thought you didn't like them. No, they're amazing live. Yeah, they were just awesome. You know, even without Dennis DeYoung, it was just great.
Yeah, the guy that they have doing his parts is really amazing. He's just like ridiculous singer. And not only that, their new drummer. I mean, like the old drummer was just fine. He was really good, solid rock and roll drummer. But Todd Zukerman is just like, he takes Styx up to like prog epicness, you know. They always had kind of hard songs, but he really added a flair that they didn't have before. And it's like, my inner musician is just like totally enthralled by that. So not only that, like, these guys are 65, almost 70 years old, and still singing like it's the 70s.
And Tommy Shaw jumping all over the stage.
Yeah.
You know, and I've always liked Tommy Shaw, with or without Styx. You know, Damn Yankees, always been a fan. He just dialed it up to 11
on
stage, and it was just amazing.
Yeah, I saw them in 2010, so they weren't as, you know, they're not old, but they're not as old as they are now, and they were crushing it, you know, in their late 50s, early 60s, just killing it, man. This band that I helped out, I got into the show for free because I was all loading for a band called Cleveland. Thanks, Stephanie Smith and Kevin Hahn.
and I'm hesitant to ask this next question, but
okay.
Any chance of new music from Black and Blue?
At the moment, I haven't heard anything that is giving me a hint that Jamie wants to start writing.
Okay.
If Jamie was ready to start writing and put new Black and Blue music out, I'm assuming he would be the lead writer. I've written a couple of things that are like, it's totally Black and Blue, you know, like, and I'm like, oh man, if we ever decide to write something, that would be in for consideration.
If I can say, Jamie, this is the time to come back.
Yeah.
Tora Tora, Spread Eagle, and they both put out albums in 2019, and they rock. Junkyard, they're coming back. You know, Junkyard's been working on a big comeback the last year and a half, doing tours. I know they've gone through some stuff lately. They had a couple of shows recently, but they're coming back big. They had damn, I can't remember the name of the album. But they put out an album in 2017, I think, or
who did?
Junkyard.
Oh yeah, they're touring with LA Guns right now.
Yeah,
I'm gonna go see that show. Rough Cuts is touring with them too.
Yeah. Yeah, Junkyard had to pull out of the show here.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it's, I don't think anybody's replaced them, so it's just Rough Cut and LA Guns. LA Guns headlining. Hmm. And I'll be at that show too. I was so excited about that show, I bought a ticket and then got a press pass. No. But yeah, so it's the right time. So Jamie, if you're listening, it's a great time for new Black and Blue music.
Yeah, I kind of agree. You know, like some of my friends, my friend Britt is in Vixen, and they just put a new record
out. Yeah,
and it's gotten a lot of attention and really helped them get more shows and stuff like that. But you know, I try to defer to those guys because they've been at this for 35 years, and I go, you know what? I support whatever you want to do, and I just take my creative energy and like dump it to as much as in many other things as I can, you know, because right now I'm just like off the hook. I made this decision in 2015 that I was going to stop drinking.
Okay.
And for 2 years I didn't drink, and now I drink a little bit now, but I didn't have as much creative energy as I needed. You know, I had tons of it, but I was like, you know, wasting a lot of it with drinking. And so since 2015, I think I put out, not put out, but like I put out like two or three records, and I've written almost two or three more, just that's in creative phases, disparate creative phases, like just song written. Some are like in pieces, you know, but like I did the Metamorphosis record, I did the Loyal Order record, which is about to come out, and my friend Sarah Moon and I did a record called Good Girl Sleep Alone, and it's Sarah Moon's solo record. And the Interbasis Species record is, I put a lot of time into that. And so like, you know, almost, let's see, including the State of Balance material I've written in the last couple of years, it's like 5-6 records worth of stuff that I've been involved in writing. You know, some of it, like probably two albums worth of stuff that's like just stuff I wrote by myself.
And we talked a lot about the invasive species last time, and that's in the video online. If you're watching this separately, or if you're listening on the show, there's a whole much longer interview with Brandon Cook available on pariahrocks.com and YouTube if you just search for Brandon Cook.
Cool.
Quickly, I wanted to ask you, when you play Appetite for Deception, which is the Guns N' Roses tribute band that I am a huge fan of,
yeah,
what's your favorite GNR song to play?
Ooh, man, that's tough. I think Don't Damn Me. I really like playing that song because it's so aggressive. Dead Horse is super groovy. I love that song. I have to give you like a list because I can't even pick because I love so many of those tunes. You know, like Sweet Child of Mine is a great one to play live because people freak over that guitar solo. And I've gotten pretty good at playing it over the last 14 years. And every time I play that solo, people are just like, oh my God, that guitar solo, you know? But Paradise City, every time we get to that solo at the end, it's just like mayhem. The fucking audience goes insane.
I've seen them.
Yeah.
You hear the boom. And they go,
yeah, right. We do this intro where it's like, I kind of mess with the guys every once in a while, but most of the time we do an intro using "Mother" by Pink Floyd.
Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while, I like end it with a different song in the key of G, and everyone will go, "Oh," you know? And then we go. Then I laugh and go in to start playing the intro, and as soon as they hear the boom, they just go nuts. And when it's doing the Lynyrd Skynyrd ending where they go really fast, and honestly to me it's like a gospel ending, you know, it's like a gospel band, you know, and Axl's the preacher, and if you listen really close, there's background singers going, take me down to the paradise city where the grass is green and the girls are pretty.
Yep.
You know, and so when we have the girls on stage with us, it's so amazing, you know, because there's like the harmonies going, and it's like, I want to see, girl, could you could be. It's totally, to me, it's like, Jesus is here. Amen, brother. You know, it's like, it's all people, and people lose their shit over that thing, man. I just go crazy. So even though
it really resonates.
Yeah.
It resonates with people. I mean, a lot of the lyrics came from, you know, Axel's childhood and living in Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
And then transitioning to, you know, the mean streets of L.A. in the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah.
And it was, yeah, I mean, I think we all feel like, you know, I could really use some time, you know, just out in the grass and in the sun and not worrying about all my adulting.
Yeah, right. Yeah, absolutely, man. It totally resonates with me that way. You know, like the lyrics are pretty grungy, like the front half of it, you know, but then it's like, just take me home, like get me away from this hard, you know.
So quickly tell me about Metamorphosis.
Well, Metamorphosis is a project that I co-founded with Andy Korn, who's the producer and drummer of the project, and Larry Smith, who is the singer of the project. Larry Smith is locally known as the lead singer of a Scorpions tribute band and several other things, but he's also got a Led Zeppelin tribute band called Valhalla. He's just a phenomenal singer, and we all sort of, like, it was really Andy's idea. He wanted to take classic jazz and show tunes and transform them into heavy metal classics. It was like,
nice.
So we wanted to just kind of use like the classic style of like 80s heavy metal, like Dio and Maiden and, you know, things like that, and sort of collide them with, you know, the best jazz show tunes of, you know, like we did like Strangers in the Night, and like we did Hit the Road Jack by Ray Charles.
Nice.
And we did My Favorite Things, you know, the classic Julie Andrews from, so we did that classic, and it was really, really, really cool when we started doing it. And we are planning to do a second record, but we haven't talked about it yet because it's very expensive to do the, you know, get all the mixing and stuff. And we used Sammy Hagar's mixing guy, Jamie Durr, and he mixed the crap out of this thing. It sounds so good. You know, we recorded it in Andy's home studio and then sent it off to Jamie because Jamie and Andy have been really long-term friends. And, you know, currently Jamie works directly with Sammy Hagar on almost all of his records. He did the Chickenfoot record, and I think he did the recent record with The Circle. And, you know, so
good album.
He's really, really awesome at what he does. And in fact, Jamie came up to Portland a couple weeks ago, and right when I got back from Mega Cruise, and the morning I woke up, I went to the studio, and me and Jamie and Andy like worked on three songs for this local sort of roots rock band. And it's just great working with those guys. They're really creative and very high standard of excellence, and just trying to make like world class music all the time. So that, I guess that's what we wanted Metamorphosis to be, you know. As with the Loyal Order and all the other things I work on, I want it to be at that international, you know, sort of, if there's going to be a legend formed, that's the level I want to be at, you know? So, Metamorphosis followed along that line. And, you know, several times it was like, no, that solo's not good enough. We got to recut that. You know, that arrangement's a little weird. You know, Jamie was like, nah, man, you got to recut that drum track, and those guitars aren't with the drums, and re-edit that, you know, whatever it was to get it to the point where, you know, we had everything at, you know, as high level as possible.
Yeah. And
so Metamorphosis has been, you know, it's been a lot of hard work, and, you know, we had this really great video for it, Dave Grohl made a video for the Foo Fighters. It was explaining their last record that they put out. So, and he got a wild hair. And he messaged that guy, and he made our video.
Oh, nice.
It was so cool. I was like looking at it, and I'm just like, it's the same as Dave Grohl. We worked with that guy, and that guy worked with Dave Grohl. That's amazing, you know? It's like 1 degree from Dave.
I know Dave Grohl's a big influence to yours.
Oh, he's huge. And one of the reasons I have put so much creative energy out there is because of him. You know, it's like he wants to do a record, so he goes and does it. He doesn't go like, well, I've got Foo Fighters, so I'm not doing anything. He's like, no, I'm on the Queens of the Stone Age record. I'm on the Tenacious D record. I'm on this record. I'm on those Crooked Vultures or them Crooked Vultures. And he just keeps doing stuff like that. You know, he wants to do movies and he wants to do this. And I'm just like, that's what I want to do. I want to be like, what's the next creative project I can be a part of? You know, I'll always like weigh heavily on the bands that I work with, not weigh heavily on them, hopefully, but like put most of my weight and my energy into those bands. But I want to do everything I can do, you know, and Dave Grohl was a huge, you know, I mean, obviously he was in the movies. He was in the Tenacious D movie as the devil, you know, so I would love to, you know, if I have any acting skills at all, I hope somebody like picks me up and says, dude, you need to be in my movie. I would love to do that. It'd be fucking awesome. So
feel free to take a frame from this video as the headshot and submit it to your agent.
Cool. So, yeah. Anyway, yeah, Dave's a huge influence on me, and working with someone that he worked with was it was really fucking cool. And our video turned out amazing. It got a ton of views. It was like, I think it got like 500,000 views on Facebook. It was for our song Night and Day, which is a cover of Frank Sinatra classic, Cole Porter classic, originally done by Sinatra. And it's, I mean, we did this super heavy, like Black Sabbath version of the song. It was like, we kind of made this song. We took Night and Day and we kind of crossed it with Children of the Grave. Like, we took it and kind of made the two cross, and the results are pretty fucking cool. I really dig it.
Well, I think I'm going to play that then.
Yeah, play Night and Day by Cole Porter as done by Metamorphosis.
All right. I know you got to get to another gig. So I wanted to thank you for another great interview.
Oh, my pleasure, man.
Brandon Cook, guitarist for Black and Blue, The Loyal Order, and other projects.
Too many to list.
Well, I'm about to. Hit pariahrocks.com. That's PARIAHROCKS.com. In the show notes for this Hard, Heavy, and Hair show, I'm going to link to all of Brandon's projects. All his websites, all his Facebook fan pages. And I had to list them out so I didn't forget anything. Black and Blue, The Loyal Order, State of Valence, Invasive Species, Metamorphosis, Appetite for Deception, The Guns N' Roses Tribute, Jukebox Heroes, The Foreigner Tribute Band, and I've also linked to where you can take guitar, bass, and being in a band lessons from a bona fide rock star. Right here, Brandon Cook will teach you. And if that weren't enough, you can watch my full interview with Brandon Cook right there in the show notes and on YouTube. I could only fit so much of that interview on the air on the radio show, but the whole interview is available as a video. You can sit down, you can watch it. There are too many topics to mention. Just go and watch.
I talk a
lot.
This
very interesting man, this amazing musician. It's a lot of topics. So, Brandon, thank you very much for joining me on the show again.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. I'm so happy to be here. You are an awesome interviewer and
thank you.
Very good friend. So I appreciate you bringing me on the show and letting me do this, letting me talk my guts out. That's what I do.
Right. Well, thank you.
Thank you, man.
Hard, Heavy, and Hair, badass music for badass listeners with Pariah Burke.
Remember, to hear the music discussed in this interview, stream the on-demand Hard, Heavy, and Hair show at pariahrocks.com.
That's PARIAHROCKS.com.
Also hit pariahrocks.com to stream or listen on a radio station near you. The regular 2-hour Hard, Heavy, and Hair show with me, Pariah Burke. Hard, Heavy, and Hair is your weekly dose of hard rock, heavy metal, and hair bands from the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, 2010s, and today, including the latest new releases, your old favorites, and deep cuts and rare hair, along with rock news and trivia.
This has been a Pariah Burke production. Copyright 2020. PariahRocks.com. The home of hard, heavy, and hair. Send requests, fan mail, and nude photos to Hard, Heavy, and Hair on PariahRocks.com. Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Pariah Rocks.